Okay, go for it.
Okay, I should have had the article before me, but the guy has had his own website, and he has a Christian Action outfit that he's worked with for a while that didn't deal with defense issues because he didn't want to, you know, he didn't want to do anything to get himself in trouble for disclosing anything top secret. But he felt now that he had to come out because he said that the thing in Sudan and Afghanistan was just, you know, was Clinton just trying to, you know, save his butt. And he thinks that Clinton right now is getting ready to go into some more adventures. He's constantly, and the other day I went down myself to Washington, D.C., because I heard there was going to be a rally down there, and I thought it was at noon, but it was actually at 9, and I missed it. But they said there was about 100 people for impeaching Clinton. Well, I went around to, later on, I was just walking around.
Out of a nation of 260 million people, that's going to get him impeached.
Well, it was only a small group, and it wasn't advertised. It was just a little group from Delaware. You know, I mean, it wasn't advertised on the radio. Just some guy from Delaware happened to call in the Maryland station.
Yeah.
At one time, and that's where I went down, but I didn't even hear the time.
What do you think will happen if Clinton is impeached?
What do I think will happen?
Yeah.
Well, if they impeach him for the treason which he has committed, which Bob Barr would like to, I think, like to getting for the crimes that he's done, I think it will wake up a lot of people. But if he gets impeached on the Monica stuff, or if he just resigns over Monica, I don't think it's going to do a damn hardly any good.
Well, do you think something's going to change if he gets impeached or if he resigns?
I think if he gets impeached, and if one senator has the balls to talk about the China stuff, or if one senator has the nerve to talk about the dead bodies on national television when they have the impeachment hearings and are allowed to speak about that, I think, it'll wake a lot of people up. I really do think it would wake a lot of people up.
Let me ask you again. Do you think anything's going to change? You know, if he resigns or gets impeached, Al Gore is going to be president. Do you think anything's going to change?
Well, we can only fight one battle at a time. So if he gets impeached, it serves to wake people up. If he gets impeached for his criminal activities, I think it will wake some more people up. I mean, I don't know of any silver bullet. I don't know if you know of any. I guess you don't, but, I mean, I don't know anybody that does. But I just feel like right now it's an issue. The guy's a criminal. He's got all these dead bodies around him. And the people just keep dying, like this lady, Mary Mahoney. I don't know if you heard, but Jim Collier died the other day, too, suddenly of cancer.
Uh-huh.
You remember the guy, Jim Collier, that wrote the vote scam book?
Uh-huh.
He just died.
I know all about the cancer thing.
I'm really glad to hear it because he was a hard fighter.
They did the same thing to me.
What's that?
They did the same thing to me. I went walking with my dog late one night, and I was shot in the chest with something that sounded like an air pistol or an air rifle, and then developed a very fast-growing tumor exactly in that spot, and was diagnosed with cancer.
Well, what I was going to tell you, are you healed of it now? Or?
Yes. Thank God, and thanks to some very good friends of mine who know about cancer and about medicine and about natural and herbal healing. I began to take huge doses of what they prescribed for me, and it didn't work for, like 2 or 3 months. It was like, didn't stop it at all, and then all of a sudden it began to shrink and then go away. We don't have time to go into that kind of stuff.
If I can mention, what I saw down in D.C., Bill, the IMF was having a precursor to the meeting for this week, and they had all their big sleeve balls in the Blair House, and I was trying to film, but they wouldn't even let us tee on. They only let the media get near them. So only certain approved media were even allowed to get near these bums. They had Secret Service security all around these global banksters, and they were at the Blair House. Then they went over to the Treasury for a couple hours, and then they went and finished their meeting up in the White House.
Well, you can't blame them. You know, if I was one of them, I'd want to be surrounded by security all the time, too.
Well, yeah, well, unfortunately, they should need security because the citizens ought to be so outraged at what they're... And what they're saying is they're going to give 90-some billion dollars of American, hard-working Americans' money away to these other countries if they get this through Congress, if they're doing this.
They're not going to give hard-working Americans money away to anybody. They're going to print some money, and loan it to people who are going to ultimately pay them back at exorbitant interest rates. But in the meantime, it's not going to help anything, and it's not really going to bail anybody out, because this is a world global economic collapse, and $90 billion is nothing in that scenario. It's not even a drop in a bucket.
Well, I would agree, but it gives...
It gives you the aura that they're doing something. It makes everybody think that they're going to do something. They're not going to do anything.
Well, I don't think they're doing anything good. I just think they're it's a way of putting us in more debt and having an excuse to raise taxes.
What difference does it make? This is a debt-based society. There's not $1 put into circulation in this country that wasn't put into circulation through debt, through borrowing. That's our economy. That's the way it works. You cannot put money into circulation in this country unless somebody borrows that exact same amount of money.
I guess that's right, but I nevertheless don't.
The truth.
I don't give them any money.
What?
You know, I stopped giving them money years ago.
I pay all lawful and constitutional taxes, which I am required to pay.
Other than that, they get nothing. I pay all the taxes I'm required to. I pay the excise taxes when I buy gas and all the federal taxes that I have to. And unfortunately, I'm paying it on my phone now, this universal charge, which I really shouldn't be paying. But if I don't, I won't be able to communicate right now. Except maybe go to a payphone. But it's pretty hard to do that. It's pretty inconvenient and hard to go to a payphone because you don't want to pay this extra tax that is probably tied in with the UN anyway, this universal tax that they have now on our phone lines. But one more thing was, when I was down there, I walked around to the back of the White House, and Clinton had flown in on his helicopter, and this guy said, well, the Secret Service guy said, well, I said, was he in another country? He said, no, he just goes down to the Pentagon pretty often. And that, according to what Tomlin was saying, he's going down to the Pentagon. That's why he's going down to the Pentagon, is to play with...
You know what? You know what? I got to stop you right here. You're listening to something that you have no proof of, and I can tell you that's not the way the military works. The president does not go down to the Pentagon and play war games.
Well, that's what this guy told me.
I don't care what he says. I was attached to the Office of Naval Intelligence. I was attached to the staff, the Commander-in-Chief, the Pacific Fleet. I know how these things are done, and that's not the way it's done.
Well,
the president doesn't go looking for a war. Things happen. He gets advice from the CIA. He gets advice from the Defense Intelligence Service. He gets advice from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he gets advice from his cabinet, and he doesn't go down to the Pentagon and play war games on a computer and look for a war. He doesn't do that.
Well, it just came out, though. It just came out the other day.
I don't care if it just came out the other day.
Well, on the media, it was all over the media. He did not consult with anyone other than Shelton on the Joint Chiefs of Staff before he bombed those Afghanistan and Sudan.
No, you're talking about in the military. He consulted with a lot of people, I can guarantee you, because you cannot bomb anybody without consulting a lot of people.
He did not consult with the rest of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Bill.
He doesn't have to. All he has to do is consult with his chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
That's all he did.
No, it's not all he did. I guarantee you he consulted his cabinet and he consulted other people.
I'm sure he consulted with the Thomases.
With the what?
Could look on TV and how they could spin it, I'm sure.
How are you sure? How do you know?
Because the guy's a psychopath. I think.
Oh, because the guy's a psychopath, you know that something happened. I beg your pardon. You don't know what happened. You're guessing.
He's admitted that he did not consult anybody on the Joint Chiefs of Staff other than Shelton.
He doesn't have to. That's the job of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to run the Chiefs of Staff. He is the liaison with the president.
So
that's how the chain of command works.
But he told Shelton he was not allowed to discuss it with the Joint Chiefs.
How do you know what he told Shelton?
Because it's already come out in the media.
No, that's what somebody wrote in an article. You don't know that.
Well, then I don't know anything for sure. I don't know anything 100%.
Then why are you repeating stuff that you don't know?
I can only relay information that I receive.
That's not what you're doing. You're not saying, I read this in an article and it may or may not be true. You're stating all this as fact, and I'm telling you that you don't know if it's fact or not, and neither does anybody else.
Well, I assume
What you're saying is the press tells the truth, and I can assure you that the press very seldom ever tells the truth.
I don't believe just what I hear from the... If I don't see it from other sources, I usually don't believe what the press says.
What other sources have you seen it from?
Well, it's on the Internet. I mean, it's different sources on the Internet, world.com,
and
other sources.
So are a lot of things that people have posted on their websites that they claim that I wrote that I never saw in my life.
Well, I'm not claiming anything you said. I'm only just telling you what I...
Well, I'm just telling you. You can't cite the Internet as I saw it on the Internet, so it's true. You can't.
I would believe the Internet about as far as I would trust the media.
Then why do you believe all this is true with no proof?
Because with Bill Clinton, he's an evil man, and there was no talk about bombing Afghanistan or Sudan at all before he did it. And now, like I said, this guy has come out and...
There was no talk about invading Panama before we did it either. But I guarantee you, Ronald Reagan consulted with a lot of people before he did it.
Well, Ronald Reagan probably did, but Ronald Reagan was not the type of psychopath that Bill Clinton was.
You flunked the test. Ronald Reagan wasn't president when we invaded Panama. George Bush was.
Well, I don't know, but all I can say is
I know you don't.
I don't trust anything a man like that would do. He's there for nothing but whatever the banksters.
It's okay not to trust him. It's okay not to trust him. I don't trust him either. But it is not okay to spread rumor as fact if you don't know that it's fact. That's not okay.
If I can't believe anything that I see ever or hear, I mean, and I can't relay it until I go and see it myself, I don't have the resources to investigate every story, and I don't know how else. If I can't believe that the Joint Chiefs of Staff, if they tell you that they weren't involved on it,
No. I don't dispute that. He doesn't have to consult with all of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Just the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is the only one that he's required to talk to.
Well,
he's the commander. He's the man in charge.
When you bomb another country,
No. There are set procedures in government that are followed, even in the White House.
Oh, there's set procedures, but I don't think the Constitution allows you to bomb countries that aren't at war with you.
Who's talking about the Constitution? You didn't mention the Constitution before. And
right,
and I'll tell you right now, the people in Washington, D.C. don't give a damn about the Constitution and haven't for a long time.
Well, I agree.
So what makes you get so upset that they're not following it now? They haven't followed it for many, many years.
In fact,
for all intents and purposes, it's in the trash can.
I think it's ever more blatant than it's ever been before, what they do.
Well, my friend, it might be to you and I, because maybe we read the Constitution, but for the vast majority of the sheeple out there, they don't even know that anything's wrong. I can guarantee you that.
Well, I don't know. I hear more and more.
Well, tune in to CNN Interactive, and you can hear it from their own mouths. You can hear the sheeple when they poke the microphone under their mouth and say, what do you think about this, or what do you think about that? You'll see the most ignorant people that probably have ever lived on the face of this earth about their own country and their own law and the way things are supposed to work.
I agree with you, but I think that there are more people waking up.
You're right about that.
And all we can do, I think, is keep trying to wake up as many people as we can and take advantage of things that come up to educate more people.
Well, we can, but we must stick to facts and things that we can prove through documentation and sourcing. Quoting the press as fact will only get you in trouble and ultimately will discredit you after you've done it enough and people go out and look and check and find out that the press lied once again and the lie was repeated from your lips. You are the one who will be discredited. And I'm trying to save you from that. I'm not trying to hurt you. That's why I'm telling you, you must investigate, you must research, and if you can't prove it, you must not go around repeating it. Whether you think it's true or not doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, from what I've seen, it looks pretty, the guy's credentials and everything looks pretty serious. I mean, it doesn't look like something's just made up about the guy.
Listen,
what I can see about the man.
Listen to me carefully. This is the age of deception. Almost everything that you see and hear from almost every source is a lie, including documents.
I think it is good to look at it with a paranoid mind.
You don't have to be paranoid. Just don't believe everything you see and hear until you have done the research and checked it out. And don't tell me you can't do it, because I'm no different than you. I have a family. I don't have a bunch of money. And I can do it. And if I can do it, you can do it. And you must start doing it, so that you can stay credible and people will listen to you, because we need you fighting on our side. We need you.
All right. talk to you later. God bless you.
God bless you too.
Thanks.
520-333-4578. Thank you for calling. Good evening. You're on the air.
You know, I have a friend who's Arab. And he told me once when he was arguing, goes back and forth to Middle East, and he said he was arguing with an American once, and he said he was trying to prove and show him a certain point.
Uh-huh.
The American said to him, "Now look, what I just told you is true, and I've had three sources to back it up." And he goes, "What are your sources?" He said, "ABC, NBC, and CNN."
And I bet that he really believed it too.
No, the American truly believed those were three valid sources.
Yeah, I'm sure that he did. I know people just exactly like that. If they see it on television, it's true, and nobody can argue with them. You can show them documents. You can prove it in many different ways, absolutely, so that there is no doubt whatsoever, and they will still not listen because they heard it from Dan Rathenot's mouth.
Now, since you're so feisty tonight, arguing with everybody, I'm going to bring up another topic that perhaps we could discuss here.
Okay.
I think actually it comes from a little earlier. The fellow made that one joke, and you said, you know, you don't like racists and things like that.
No, I don't at all.
And I don't. Let me just. I think that this perhaps not you, but I think today that the thing that people fear most, especially politicians or whatever, is if somebody comes up and says, "You're a racist" or "You're anti-Semite."
That's true.
That'll drive more fear. Somebody will do whatever they can to prove the point that that's wrong. And the point I want to make is, I think we have sort of this Darwinistic idea of race. And
wait a minute. What do you mean by Darwinistic idea? Can you explain that?
Zoological. You know, like, you know how in zoological, well, here's a dog, but here's a German Shepherd dog, and here's a purebred dog, or whatever.
Yeah.
But really, I think race is more of an ethos. You know what I'm saying? It's your character. It's what's inside you. For instance, and a race feeling is what binds the people together. Now, I forget who said this once, but you know, it used to be...
It can actually be any common denominator for a people who live in a geographical area. It does not have to be race.
It's often been said, I think, because people have always brought someone in from another, say, zoological race, if you will, if they brought strength into this, say, their tribe or something, a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
You know, they respected the strength.
Uh-huh.
So, for me, if someone is, say, Oriental descent, but they're raised here in America, they have, you know, an idea of what it means to be an American.
Uh-huh.
That, to me, is sort of the Western or American race, where the Chinese people in general, from China, for the most part, are against what I think. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, yes, it's a different philosophical
yes.
viewpoint of the way you should live your life and think and address problems and all of those kinds of things. Yes.
So I think this is where people get confused with this race thing. They should be, it's the feeling you have, maybe the national feeling, the thing that brings you together. And America is very unique. But still, I think there's a lot of people, you can have people of your own zoological race, if you will, that say are very liberal or socialistic. Are really your enemy.
That's true. Are demonstrate a philosophy or way of living that's totally foreign to what you're willing to accept are the way that you're willing to live your life.
So I think a strong race belief is something we should foster within our culture now, but a race belief, not, like I said, the zoological, that's the, you know, white, black, green, red, but the race as a feeling of what drives, you know, the race feeling that initially maybe made America what it was.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of people out there that will not understand that concept as long as you use the word race. I think if you could substitute that with something else, I don't know what.
Maybe culture.
Culture is a good one. Because, you know, I look at people in this country as Americans or not Americans. I don't care what color their skin is. I don't care what religion they belong to. They either subscribe to the principles and ideals that are American, that made this country, that set men free for the first time in the history of the world, or they don't. And if they don't, in my estimation, they're not American. They want to change it into something that will do away with freedom.
That's a very good point. And again, even though you can look back at the early Greeks and say, well, you know, at one time they said that they were free, and of course you say, well, you know, maybe they're not free in our sense.
But they weren't. They had a hierarchical type of government whereby if someone was in a social class higher than you, they could lop off your arm and nobody would say a thing about it. That's not freedom.
I know, but you know what and you've heard this too, and I'll just relate it to you. Because when the Greek culture was invaded by the Persians,
mm-hmm.
And at Marathon,
uh-huh.
140 or 50 Athenians died, and 6,000 or 7,000 Persians died. And I think, if you allow me just to stretch this idea of freedom,
sure.
The fact that the Greeks had this concept of their freedom, and the Persians were basically driven, well, they were slaves, soldiers, driven by the whip, you can see what the outcome was in that battle. That free men will always answer the calls of battle and put forth an effort that you just cannot get from a slave-driven army.
Absolutely. That was my message early in the broadcast.
That's right. I just wanted to... Yeah. When you said that, that's what I thought about.
Yeah, nobody's going to die for the United Nations flag.
That's right.
Well, a lot of people are willing to die for Old Glory, I'll guarantee you.
Yes.
Because it represents... not a country or a geographical boundary. It represents great principles and ideals and the greatest liberalism that's ever existed. Freedom. And it is the icon for the only free people that have ever really lived upon the face of this earth. Truly free, I mean. There have been other people who call themselves free, or you might read in the history book that the ancient Romans were free, but when you really get into their way of life, they weren't free. They were living in a time of terrible danger, and they didn't dare be free.
But, you know, also with this idea of freedom and this idea of the I, ego, I think you can take it too far, this what do they call it today, radical individualism. Even though there's freedom, you still have to, I think...
You must be responsible. Yes, anarchy is not good. That's the opposite end of the scale of total control. And to me, it's just as both of them are stink just as bad. And you can smell them a long way away. At least I can.
Earlier, that you had loyalty to family, friends. I would say also loyalty to sort of your culture or your society when it serves that loyalty, I should say. That's what makes a community and a nation. As opposed to just individuals running around.
Well, of course. You know, that's individuals just running around with no cohesiveness and no goals and no common philosophy is a recipe for chaos.
That's right. And that's where maybe instead of the word we use culture, if you can get that common culture, which I think America had at least prior to the Civil War.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they had it up until maybe... the early part of the century, even.
Of course, after the Civil War, you lost the state rights were deeply, in other words, their rights were taken away as far as central government, I think, if I remember my history.
Well, nothing constitutional was done. What was done under the guise of martial law and Reconstruction.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And that was never, ever rescinded. And that has led up to the state of affairs that we have today with other major accomplishments to take away our freedoms along the way, such as 1913, 1933, and some of the other things that they've...
What was 13? Was that income tax?
1933 was the first, it was corporate income tax and the establishment of the Federal Reserve Board.
And what was 1913?
Yeah.
That was 1913?
Yes, that was 1913.
And 1933 was...
1933 was Roosevelt's Emergency Banking Act on March the 9th, where Congress approved all past presidents, gave blanket approval forever for all past, present, and future executive orders that the president may write, relegating the legislative branch to the executive branch of government.
So therefore, he gave him more power.
Yes.
So like when the papacy...
And the Constitution does not allow for that.
So like when the papacy in the 18th century, I think it was 18th century, the Pope decided that he was infallible.
Yeah.
Where that wasn't in the rules before.
Not only infallible, but the personification of God on earth.
Yeah, that was, I think that was in the 18th century that came about.
Yeah.
Was it really, really full force of it. Well, look, let somebody else talk. Very, I was trying to get you to see if we could have a discussion on that, but I guess kind of agree on that idea of race and culture, so that's good. And,
yeah, I didn't find anything to disagree with.
Okay,
if I did, I would certainly have told you.
But, let's get somebody else on there so I can hear you arguing again. I thought that. Take care now, the both of
them. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for your call. 520, yeah, he is cool. 520-333-4578 is the number if you want to get your 2 cents in here. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah, let me get your mic.
Please do.
Where are you, Doug?
Okay.
Louis from Louisville.
Hi, Louis. Kentucky, huh?
Pardon me?
Kentucky?
Your first caller, I think you were right in chastising him. I don't think it's a nice thing to downgrade somebody's beliefs. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Why? He wasn't downgrading beliefs. He was making fun of the race.
Yeah. Bill, I think we could agree that a cemetery is a holy place.
Yes.
Any place of reverence.
Any cemetery.
And tears.
Yes, for a great many people. Yes, for other people, happiness. You know, some people suffer tremendously before they die, and sometimes it's a great relief when they move on.
That's a good point. No, you're right. I would agree with that. There's a story. There was a funeral of an atheist.
Uh-huh.
Now that you mention this, it just dawned on me. And this atheist died. And as it so happens, all his friends were atheists. And they all met at the funeral home to say goodbye to their friend.
Uh-huh.
And they stood over the casket, and he was laying in the casket, and he was all decked out. He had his new suit on, a nice tie, and his hair was combed. And the two of his closest friends were standing there, and they were looking down at the gentleman in the coffin. And one atheist said to the other atheist, he said, "Isn't that a shame? All dressed up and nowhere to go."
I like that, yeah. That's very good.
There you go.
Yeah, wouldn't it be terrible if
I like your program.
Wouldn't it be terrible if that turns out to be true?
Yeah.
That this is it?
Well, it's not true.
Remember that old song, That's All There Is?
That's all there is.
No. Is that all there is?
Yeah. Great Day. Have you ever heard that old song by Bing Crosby?
Yeah.
Great Day.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
And then there's a song that I have also by Bing Crosby, Now Is the Hour. That's another nice song.
Yeah, it is. A beautiful song, as a matter of fact.
There's a song by the husband and wife team, Les Paul and Murray Ford, "The World is Waiting for the Sunrise."
I may have heard that, but I don't remember it. But I do remember Les Paul and Murray Ford.
Yeah.
Steel guitar, beautiful, beautiful music.
Yeah, he's a great guitar player.
Oh, yes.
He has arthritis now, but he's still playing. You know, I subscribe to Veritas.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at the May 1998 issue.
Yeah.
Page 4.
Uh-huh.
And there's a cartoon here.
Yeah.
Drawn by T.W.
Uh-huh.
And it shows 10 obelisks.
Yeah.
Pointing to the sky.
Uh-huh.
And at the bottom it says, 1,000 points, but no light.
Yep.
I think, at the risk of incurring your wrath, Mr. Cooper, I think that's mockery.
Mockery?
Yeah, I do.
Not at all. You see, light would be to educate everyone, not to keep things secret. In a free country, secrecy is antithematic to freedom. It is anti-freedom.
Well, in a free country, if you wish to belong to an organization, whatever it may be, whether it's Masonry or the Second Continental Army of the Republic, that is your right.
Well, I don't believe that you're right if it is a subversive organization that pretends to exist for the good of the community. And that's exactly what these secret societies do. I've studied them for over 26 years. They are subversive. They are moving us away from constitutional Republican government into world socialist totalitarian government. They are traitors.
You know, one of those obelisks might be Washington's.
One of those obelisks is Washington's. I can tell you're a new listener.
No, I've been listening. I've been listening for 4 years. I like the program. I listen every night.
Well, then how did you miss that? I made it clear. The Washington Monument is an obelisk. It is the representation of the Phallus of Osiris, the lost word of Freemasonry.
Well, there's one in St. Great Square, too.
The great work. Yes, there certainly is.
And there's one on the North Bank of the Thames.
Yes, there is.
Cleopatra's Needle.
There's also one in Central Park. I can tell you where they're all at.
Right.
And I've revealed that on this broadcast many times. It is the symbol of a secret society, a movement to socialize and bring together one world government at the expense of the freedom of the American people.
You know, practically all the Masons, Mr. Cooper, practically all the Founding Fathers, if not all, were Freemasons.
Gee, I wonder where I heard that before. I've said that right on this broadcast about a million times.
You've never explained.
I have explained.
Satisfactorily, there's a discrepancy here.
What's the discrepancy?
On the one hand, you criticize the Freemasons, and on the other, parts of the Founding Fathers.
Aren't you a Freemason?
Pardon me?
Aren't you a Freemason?
No, sir, I'm not.
What are you?
I'm a Christian.
You're a Christian?
If I were a Freemason, I would tell you. I would tell you that. No, I'm not a Freemason.
Okay, but let me ask you this. If you're a Christian, why are you defending a society that in their literature admits that they worship the Luciferian philosophy? They do admit it. I've read it on the air in their own words.
Well, you were probably quoting Albert Pike.
I was quoting Albert Pike, Alfred Boyd Kuhn, many, many others. I can quote from at least 100 different Masonic authors, prolific Masonic authors, including Manly P. Hall.
Yes, I've been reading The Secret Teachings of the Ages.
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
But let me ask you again. You are truly a Christian, why would you defend a secret organization that practices a religion which worships the Luciferian philosophy?
Well, I think that, you remember when Jesus, the Open and Secret Society of Jesus Christ, remember that?
It was the Open, Friendly, Secret Society.
Right. And it started out as a secret society, and its symbol was the fish.
It was only secret to the officers of Imperial Rome who was persecuting the Christians. That's why it's called the Open, Secret, Friendly Society.
Okay.
Our Open, Friendly, Secret Society.
The concept of Lucifer, as I understand it, Freemasons don't worship an entity called Lucifer. Lucifer represents the intellect.
I didn't say that they did.
Yep.
And you heard that on this broadcast. I said that they worship the Luciferian philosophy, which is the mind of man. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in Satan. They don't even believe in Lucifer. These are all metaphors for an arcane philosophy, which I have discussed and revealed for the first time in history. Nobody ever knew these things until I revealed them on this broadcast.
Well, there have been many books out there written over the years.
Yeah, and nobody could read them and understand what in the hell they were reading until they heard it revealed on this broadcast over the last 6 or 7 years.
May I read a quote?
Sure.
Let me move my cans of cat food here. I hope you don't get teed off of me here, because I like your program. I think you have a good show.
As long as you're polite and you have an intelligent argument, why would I get teed off at you? In fact, I haven't been teed off at anybody tonight. I have argued my point.
I'm trying to be polite.
Well, good.
Because I like you, I like Doyle, I like your family. You're very loyal to your family, and I think that's great. I'm reading from Morals and Dogma, a book that I got here in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually from Cleveland, not from Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
I just said that in case the FBI is listening.
Wait a minute. Who the hell cares if they're listening?
I know.
Who the hell cares if that subversive organization is listening?
Oh, that's just the Blarney in me.
Well, good.
It's page 195.
Okay.
Alfred Pike.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, that he has a paternal interest in our welfare and improvement, that he has given us powers by means of which we may escape from sin and ruin, that he has destined us to a future life of endless progress toward perfection and the knowledge of himself. Believe this, as every nation should, and you can live calmly, endure patiently, labor resolutely, deny yourselves cheerfully, hold steadfastly, and be conquerors in the great struggles of life.
Yeah, so what?
Nice, isn't it?
Pardon?
That's nice.
No, it's a lie.
Nice sentiments.
It's a lie. It's a lie.
Perfection.
No, I don't.
Albert Pike wrote Morals and Dogma to be given to Freemasons just entering the lodge. And for many years, it was given to everybody who entered the lodge for the first time. It was given to every single Freemason in this country, whoever was initiated as an entered apprentice.
Okay? Thomas Jefferson, James Madison.
It was given. No.
Davy Crockett.
They weren't alive.
Pardon me, sir.
You want to listen to this? Or
sure.
Do you wanna,
no.
What?
Sure.
George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and Davy Crockett had nothing to do with Morals and Dogma. And you know it.
It was written about 100 years later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what? Why would you say something like that?
Well, I think that's, as I understand it from Freemasonry, the ultimate object is to build...
Albert Pike admits...
Oh, man, no, wait a minute. I listen to you. Can you listen to me?
No, because I didn't finish. Albert Pike wrote Morals and Dogma to be given to people who just come into the lodge. Okay?
Well, it covers all 33 degrees. It's not for just people who enter
the lodge. It does not cover all 33 degrees. I have the entire ceremony and the oaths and everything for every one of the 33 degrees, starting from entered apprentice right up to the Grand Inspector General.
That's
okay?
What this book covers.
That book does not cover those.
Well,
it does not.
It right here.
I don't care what you have. I have the actual ceremonies and the oaths that are taken, and that book, in it, Albert Pike admits, in that book, I don't have the page in front of me, but I've given the page, and I have actually read from the book on this broadcast. He says, in that book, that everybody who comes through the degrees are given the same lesson in every degree, told in a different way, none of them really understanding any of it until they reach the 30th degree, where they are finally told the truth that their God is the Luciferian philosophy.
Well, here's chapter 32. The Supreme Prince of the Royal Secret. In parentheses, Master of the Royal Secret.
I have read Morals and Dogma.
Yeah, me too.
Do you have the ceremony for the 32nd degree and the oath?
But what is the title of that book?
There is no title to the book.
Well, what are you referencing then?
I'm referencing the ceremony of the initiation of the degree.
Of what degree?
The 32nd degree, the one that you're quoting.
Well, I have it right here.
You have it? You have the entire ceremony and the oath?
I
can tell you right there, it's not in there.
I have the volume, Morals and
Dogma. It's not in there. And let me ask you again, if you are a Christian, why are you defending Freemasonry?
Well, didn't Jesus say that we should love one another?
That has nothing to do with what you're doing.
I think it has everything to do.
No, it doesn't. You're defending an organization, not a brother, and not one another. You're defending an organization that is a subversive organization that worships the Luciferian philosophy as its religion.
I don't agree with that.
But I proved it on this broadcast. I've read from many of their books. I have quoted their words exactly. I never make stuff up or give my opinion where that's concerned. I have always been very careful to quote them exactly. Now, let me ask you again. Why are you defending this subversive organization?
Well, I think your premise is false.
I asked you a question. There's no premise to it. Why are you defending?
I don't think it is a subversive organization.
You don't have to think so. Give me the reason that you are defending them.
Did you have a gentleman on your program by the name of William Morgan?
Excuse me. I just asked you a question.
I gave you my answer.
No, you didn't.
This is not a court of law, sir.
Why are you defending this organization?
Because I think you're unfair.
You think I'm unfair?
And I think fairness is important.
I've been very fair. I have only used their own words. I have never convicted them on the words of anyone else, any of their detractors, any of the anti-Masons, or anybody else. I have only used their own words. How fair can you get?
Well, so you had a program. You had a program once, but you had a supposed ex-Mason by the name of William Morgan.
He wasn't a supposed ex-Mason. He was a Mason.
Right. He was.
And we got to go. Time is up.
Very interesting.
We're out of time. Good night. Good night, folks. God bless each and every single one of you. That guy was a Freemason, or I'll eat this microphone. Freemasons also tell big lies, quite frequently. In fact, Albert Pike and many other prominent Freemasons wrote, and I have quoted them on the air, that it's okay to lie in defense of Freemasonry. In fact, they're sworn they cannot tell the truth about any of it. They take blood oaths never to reveal the secrets. They can't tell the truth. To 101.1 FM Eager, classic radio, like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM is your nonprofit community service radio station. He loved me. I want